go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are, the 17th day of June, 2014. It's a real blazer and a blisterer outside, at least here in the wilds of almost level West Pycod, Virginia. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home on the interweb tubes. You can go there and find a broad selection of news stories from the day for your perusal, your edification, your examination, and your commentary. We may or may not talk about some or any of them during the course of this program. A lot of that's up to you, you know, because what we do here is called conversation radio. It's not talk radio. It's not, it's easier to think about what it is than what it ain't. But at any rate, what it is what it is, and what it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Remember, Titanic Tuesday is so named in honor of the Titanic intellect that is ever on display from the right wing in this country. Oh, they are a delight, aren't they? Named for a comment made by a 962nd level right wing blatherer who, in response to a question one day about why there were shellfish fossils or imprints in the rock strata of West Virginia, answered, because of the movement of the Titanic plates. We're still waiting on word about the movement of the Titanic punch bowl. Yeah. So there's a selection of the day's news at headonradionetwork.com. So too, easy access. And you know, I should probably be a little clearer about this. And thanks to Paul for reminding me of this yesterday evening. I should be a little clearer about this. Easy access to the chat room. You can get into the chat room just about any time, day or night. But whether or not there will be people there is entirely another matter. Usually, we are in the chat room during live program hours, to wit, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. So that's it. And I always say, you know, the chat room's a wonderful experience. It's a really happy way of augmenting the full multimedia experience that is The Horn. But it ain't a hell of a lot of fun when nobody's there. So I get that. I really, really do. So if you're listening and it would happen to be like 12:04 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time and you go running over to the chat room, nobody's going to be there. Just works that way. But anyway, during live program hours, the chat room is a raucous and rollicking place, and you are certainly welcome to jump in. We encourage you to. Folks begin wandering in at the beginning of the program. Good evening, Bean. Good evening, John CDN. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Todd. Good evening, Sparky, our indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky, on duty this evening. We may see chat room moderator Lottie later in the evening as well. So come on by. It's free. It's easy. And you just pop in and become a part of the little old community. Do help yourself to it. You'll find the pop-out player at headonradionetwork.com as well. That's great if you're listening on a PC. If you should happen to be on some sort of a mobile device, we recommend the apps from TuneIn and Stitcher, both of which carry content from The Horn. Right, yeah. And, of course, the podcast address is always over at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this here little old hillbilly elitist program. And then, of course, there's the PayPal button. I always mention the PayPal button last because I despise talking about the PayPal button, but I am happy to announce that Dr. John's challenge got met, so that's a very, very big deal. And starting at with the beginning of the program here, we're pretty much even, and we've taken a big bite out of the evening's fundraising goal thanks to our buddy Jay Cruzen. So thank you, Jay Cruzen, and thank you overnight to John and to Jan and Jerry. That's how we got to even. So we're just trying to raise the evening's $150, and hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later, and I'll keep you posted through the course of the program, and hopefully I get to shut up pretty quick about this and not say any more, because this is the least favorite part of the program for me. Where to go this evening? It's Titanic Tuesday, so we have to have some Titanic intellect, right? For a very long time, Dinesh D'Souza has been revered as an upholder of conservative family values. That's conservativefamblyvalyoz, conservative family values. Because he became the head of some sort of fundamentalist school in Manhattan or something, and then it turned out he was having this little old affair with a woman who wasn't his wife, and you know, they were just sharing the conservative family values out into a broader sphere, right? And then it turned out he was engaging in some election law violations and got his ass busted, and somehow or another, even if you do all of those things, you will still get invited back onto Fox News Radio TV Rwanda. No, really. Even though he's a recently convicted felon, is he a felon? Even though he's been shamed right out of his position of the little draw-spunky fundamentalist evangelical college he was participating in, despite all of that, he is still worth bringing on to Fox News Radio TV Rwanda. In this particular instance, the Kelly file, which is apparently some program they have on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda that involves someone named Kelly. Can't say as I watch enough to really have much more in the way of detail than that. We do, however, since it's Titanic Tuesday, courtesy of our friends over at Raw Story, we do have the audio of a conversation between the Kelly person and the Dinesh D'Souza person. Wow, 9 minutes into the program and we're already down to our first duct tape and hockey puck warning. Well, don't say I didn't, because I done. The discussion is going to be why that one in our White House hates Merkel. I'm suggesting that you might want a couple of extra straps of duct tape and bite down real hard on the hockey puck so it'll sort of lodge there and you can't just spit it out when it gets really hinky here. Oh, hell. Run the audio.
Days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Well, that was President Obama 5 days before the election promising to transform America if elected. As we watch some dramatic political events play out at home and overseas in recent weeks, a growing number of political writers are suggesting the president may have made good on that promise.
A growing number of political writers, meaning, you know, this guy that just got busted for playing fast and loose with the election laws, and yeah, I don't know what his wife calls what he was playing, but algebra? Who knows?
D'Souza joins me now. He's author of the new book, America, Imagine a World Without Her. And
you gotta give them credit. They come up with some They come up with some real catchy titles. America, imagine a world without her. And there's a picture on the front of the Statue of Liberty. I don't know what's being done to the Statue of Liberty there, but ew. Right? Edith?
And creator of the new film America, opening nationwide on July 2nd. Dinesh, good to see you.
It's amazing you can do all that and be a convicted felon. Who knew?
And so National Review featured a column, an interview with a man named Mark Halpern, who's a conservative military affairs guy, who said as follows, everything that made us what we once were is under attack. He said, culturally, in our elementary schools, filth dominating the entertainment industry, traditional faith being sneered at, the idea of American exceptionalism being downgraded.
Knee that phrase.
The idea of American exceptionalism being downgraded. Never.
This might be a good time in light of the fact that we have just had two brilliant hours of radio from Dr. Bill O'Brien to note that neither of these two people would recognize what American exceptionalism actually means if the entire members of the Massachusetts Bay Colony were to rise from the dead and explain it to them. Because, like everything else, the phrase American exceptionalism, with the right wing, and especially with the goons over at Radio TV Rwanda Fox News, it's just another dog whistle. American exceptionalism is dog whistling for why don't we bomb everything, steal it if it's not nailed to the floor, and F it if it isn't moving. Jeremy, we're off to a roaring start. Jeremy in Vermont pointing out, isn't Dinesh D'Souza technically not so white himself, and therefore this is a case of the pot calling the kettle literally black? You could say that. I was trying to stay away from it. I really, really was. Ron and Raleigh writing in right off the bat. Come on, Bob! Don't you realize that with the right wing, it's not what you do, it's what you say that it's important? Absolutely. You know it. So let's check in and see what they say.
If that is true, is that the evolution of a country that is maturing in some ways badly, in some ways, you know, well? Or is that to be blamed on President Obama, as he suggests?
Well, I think Obama is an important part of the picture. When Obama talked about remaking America, I think what many Americans missed is that in order to remake America, you have to take down the America that's here now. In other words, if you can't remake a bridge without taking down the old bridge, and Obama really did.
How about that? Any mechanical or civil engineers in the Horn family commune? Dinesh D'Souza, mechanical and civil engineer, has just declared that it is impossible to repair a bridge. If a bridge is shaky or quaky or prone to maybe collapsing, you can't just fix it. You have to tear the whole bridge down and build a new bridge. I'm going to remember that the next time a lane of the New River Gorge Bridge gets shut down, and just stop and tell the fellas with the blaze orange vests on, you're wasting your time, guys. You're going to have to tear the whole thing down. Dinesh D'Souza says so. And, you know, he's a conservative family values intellectual.
Didn't mean that he wanted a fundamental transformation. Now, of course, Obama
Why?
Can't
what,
do that.
In your mind, what was it about America that he wanted to change?
Well, I think Obama comes out of a generation, and this is a generation that began to be formed in the 1960s, but it had a very different view of America than earlier generations. Its view was that America is globally a force for evil. So in some ways, you can say that this group believes in American exceptionalism, but instead of believing that we're exceptionally good, they believe we're exceptionally evil.
Let me help Mr. D'Souza make his point. Let's take a hypothetical journey, shall we? And with Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for, say, Vietnam. Now, we know that we deliberately, intentionally, wasted meaninglessly and in vain the lives of some 55,000 fine young Americans in pursuit of a foreign policy goal that remained ever elusive in Vietnam. We talk about that with some frequency. Not so frequently do we talk about the couple of million, or was it five, Vietnamese people, you know, people who were Vietnamese and lived in Vietnam and had never lifted a finger against the United States and were merely trying to eke out some sort of subsistence living, that we helped shuffle off this here mortal coil. Now, do you suppose that to those some several millions of corpses, do you suppose that the United States was exceptionally good or exceptionally evil? And would that impression have been created in the 1960s? Well, I guess you could say so. Let's talk a little bit about Guatemala, Honduras, Chile, Iran in the 50s and early 60s. Hey, let's come up into the 1980s and talk about Reagan's death squads in places like El Salvador. Let's talk about the Reagan-funded death squad that raped and murdered nuns in Central America back when Ronald Reagan was telling us this was a shining city on a hill and that it was mourning in America. Well, it was mourning in El Salvador, too. But El Salvador's mourning, I'll take an extra U, please, Pat. M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. Do you think the nuns that were raped by Reagan's death squads thought that America was exceptionally evil? Or exceptionally? And then let's get a little more modern. Let's talk, because so many of them seem to want to have your kids and mine go back and fight some more for them. Let's talk about Iraq. We talked about Iraq at some length during yesterday's More and Monday broadcast. Do let's. I remember that eponymous photo of the man carrying the limp, dead body of what looked to be maybe a 3-year-old little girl out of the rubble of his brick home. Of course, it wasn't looking much like a home by then because it had been reduced to its original mud part of mud brick. It had been really dirt, not mud. It wasn't not very wet. It had been reduced to its original dirt state by an American Tomahawk missile. Do you suppose that guy felt like America was exceptionally good or exceptionally evil? Now, I'm not trying to give an answer one way or the other, but I am suggesting that in making these assertions, Dinesh D'Souza, recent pleader of guilty, Your Honor, to a number of federal elections criminal violations, you know, campaign finance violations, I'm sure that. Maybe Fat Tony Scalia can get after that sometime soon. Oh, what was it? Yes, it was May the 20th. According to Reuters, conservative author and filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza pleaded guilty on Tuesday to a campaign finance law violation, avoiding a trial that had been expected to begin the same day in a Manhattan federal court. D'Souza, known for his biting criticism of President Barack Obama, pleaded guilty to one criminal count of making illegal contributions in the name of others. A second count concerning the making of false statements is expected to be dismissed once he is sentenced. He used straw donors to give excess funds to a Republican named Wendy Long's U.S. Senate campaign in New York. That was in 2012. 53-year-old D'Souza stood before the U.S. district judge, a judge named Berman, and said, I knew that causing a campaign contribution to be made in the name of another was wrong and something the law forbids. I deeply regret my conduct. What it boiled down to was he asked a pair of friends and their spouses to contribute $10,000 each to Wendy Long's campaign, and then he gave them the money back. Yeah. The plot thickens. One of the people who engaged in this little song and dance, this little corruption of the idea of good government, was Denise Joseph. Now, Denise Joseph was engaged to Dinesh D'Souza while he was still rather busy being married to another woman. That's what caused him to have to resign as president of King's College, the fundamentalist evangelical school there in New York City. I mean, this guy's an expert on Fox. No, really. Tell us more, Dinesh.
And I think with Obama, you have a president who, in a sense, views his job as one of containing or curtailing the power of his own country. If you think that America's a global bully, you will try to shrink America's power in the Middle East and around the world.
Or maybe, because I'm all about alternate interpretations, maybe you think that running up a $5 or $6 trillion bill, accomplishing absolutely nothing except the misery and heartbreak involved with the death of 5,000 American service personnel and the deaths of a conservatively estimated 1 million innocent victims in Iraq, it's just not worth it, that it's not a good idea. It's not. Maybe it's not because you think we're a global bully. Maybe it's because you think it's not worth it. Maybe it's because you think that maybe we ought to mind our own damn business. Silly me.
So when people see that happening, I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that Obama's a bungler, he's inept, he doesn't understand the world situation. He is perhaps the best informed person in the world about what's going on. He understands it. That's why he's doing it. He's trying to achieve the objective of shrinking America's power in the world.
Do you think this is something particular to Barack Obama, or would you pin this on the left? In other words, if we have a President Hillary Clinton after President Barack Obama, do you think they're going to be like-minded?
Stop helping, Megan. See, it's June 2014 now, and we're not spent. The Obama derangement syndrome is slowly giving way, and we've got another example, I might add, is slowly giving way to a resurgence of Clinton derangement syndrome. And in both instances, it's a matter of accusing people. Because by the time, if she runs, by the time she runs, Hillary Clinton will be roundly described as the most liberal human being ever to run for the presidency of the United States. Because that's what they say about everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Lester Maddox rose from the grave and ran for the presidency of the United States on the Democratic ticket, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda would be right there to declare Lester damn Maddox the most liberal human being ever to run for the presidency of the United States. Because it's all they got. Now, here we have a president in Barack Obama who has done more for the corporate class than perhaps even George W. Bush did. Who has done less to affect people's rights to carry and load guns than maybe any other president before him. I mean, the only gun law that's been passed in the entire Obama presidency was the law he signed into effect that would allow people to open carry or carry weapons in national parks. You know, because bears. Yeah, or pumas.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, so there's our question. Our question is on the table, and it's about to be answered by Dinesh D'Souza, lover of Merca, as to whether or not Hillary Clinton also hates America.
I think, first of all, this is not something that we saw in previous Democratic presidents. No one would suspect Harry Truman or John F. Kennedy, not even Bill Clinton. Jimmy Carter was inept. He was a kind of a bungler.
You know, that man bungled us into 4 years of never being in a war, and it's four years. It's one of the rare 4 years in the history of the recent history of the United States in which we weren't at war with someone. That's some kind of bungling. Sure is bungling when you tell America that it might be smart to start dealing with energy problems in a very serious fashion. You know, he sure was bungling. It was amazing. It was almost Obama-esque. You'll recall that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda recently put up a font saying that Barack Obama was warned about... Oh, what was it? Which thing? It was the VA hospital scandal. Obama warned about problems at VA in 2008. Of course, he didn't become president until 2009. Well, see, it's kind of the same thing with Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter gets that, you know, a bungler. And bear in mind, Jimmy Carter literally is a nuclear scientist. While he was graduating near the top of his Naval Academy class, the guy that keeps getting invited on the Sunday news programs, John McCain, graduated at the bottom of his. You can kind of tell. Because, for instance, Jimmy Carter never crashed a nuclear submarine, whereas John McCain crashed 4 or 5 Navy jets. Education will out. But Jimmy Carter got handed to him an economy in an inflationary death spiral. Nobody seems to remember Gerald Ford and his little red buttons that said WIN, whip inflation now. We were all going to make inflation stop in America by wearing a red button with white letters on it. But yeah, that's the bungler. The guy who traded arms for hostages. The guy who directly countervened a published actual law passed by the Congress, signed by the president, enacted, that forbade sending money to the Nicaraguan Contras. That guy's not a bungler.
Yeah, that guy told us it was morning in America. And that, well, ketchup is a vegetable, Mommy. I will be, too, soon enough.
Yeah, that's not a bungler. How about Hillary? Is she a bungler, Dinesh?
But I think with Obama, it's a different... We now have a president who has a very different view of America than most Americans, Republican or Democrat. With Hillary, I think it's a little bit of an open question. She's been an instrument of Obama while serving in the Obama State Department. I personally believe that she is more like Obama than she is like Bill.
But let me ask you this.
Americans
if you were so... If people were to believe that Barack Obama... Because when I hear you talk, it sounds like you're accusing him of being almost anti-American. You know, if he were anti-American, well, if he didn't love this country, why would he want to be president of it?
Well, look at it this way. It's not that Obama hates America. It's not that he's trying to take America down. It's almost like this. If I was in a family...
Okay. You may have thought that you got... Maybe you got up in the middle of... Because we've been at this for a half an hour now. Maybe you got up and went to get a drink of water. Maybe you got up and went to get the tequila bottle. Maybe you just wanted to get up, and maybe you needed a free hand from the duct tape to keep dealing the solitaire. Whatever it was, strap back in. If the hockey puck's out, put it back. Otherwise, you'll be bothering the neighbors, and you know, the dogs in the yard will probably howl and stuff when you start the screaming. Because this is where it gets fun. This is where Dinesh D'Souza probably tells us a little more about his upbringing than Barack Obama's, And along the way, just makes a really, really nasty little analogy.
Well, look at it this way. It's not that Obama hates America. It's not that he's trying to take America down. It's almost like this. If I was in a family and I believed that my dad was some kind of a serial killer or a child molester, I would still love him. He would still be part of my family, but I would do everything I could to prevent him from doing these evil actions. I would think that that would be not only good for the world, but good for my dad. So with Obama, he believes that he's doing the world a favor and America a favor by controlling this rogue elephant that is
America,
the United States.
So America is the child molester in this scenario. I was just trying to follow Dinesh. I think we may have jumped off the deep end.
Well,
yeah, I mean, when you lose Megyn Kelly, you've really lost. No, Megyn, America's not the child molester. Barack Obama is. He's also into domestic violence, too, apparently. This here is what you call professional for-profit media broadcasting. Mm-hmm. How much do they have to pay Megyn Kelly to do this? I mean, just to get up there and embarrass yourself day after day, night after night, to sit there and talk with Dinesh D'Souza and not need to just immediately run during the breaks and get yourself hosed down in Clorox to get the scum off of you just from being in the same split screen with him. Now, you heard that right. Barack Obama is like unto, I do love me some King James Version English, he is like unto a man who molesteth his children. But Dinesh does want you to know that he would still love his father even if his father was a child molester. God. Titanic Tuesday. Oh, it has a name. Ron and Raleigh noting, Bob, Bob, Bob. You have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. We make a lot of omelets. I'll have the Iraq omelet. No, wait. You know, no. I don't think I want the hummus in my omelet today. I'm gonna have the Guatemalan omelet with the plantains and the blood. Sorry. I mean, Linda, Scott, I know it's the dinner hour. Sorry. Blood omelets. This coming in from our buddy Irish Dave. Dinesh D'Souza, that's Dinesh D apostrophe UH. Some of these things have to be translated. Dinesh D'Souza, the exception that proves America rules. The question remains when Dinesh and Mr. Ayn Rand, or not Ayn Rand, Mr. Ann Coulter, dine together. Who pays the bill? Oh, Irish Dave, come on, quit kidding. We both know they dine and dash. They're conservatives. They're deeply fiscally conservative. And they don't tip well either. Yeah, nice crowd forming up in the chat room, by the way. Hi, Todd. Hi, Texas T. Like I said, John, Kathy, CDN, Jay Cruzen's in there, Bean, Anatole. Lottie has found his way in. Good evening, Lottie. We're gonna be busy. We are going to be busy. Oh, something I wanted to share with you from last night, actually. I tell you frequently about the bizarre, twisted, and occasionally just plain weird and sleazy emails that I get from right-wing story pitchers. This one came stumbling in yesterday. I mean, you can tell. You know how your email goes bing when you get an email? Well, I've got my system set up so that when I get one of these right-wing pitches, it goes, okay, we're here. Dear producers, this from Audrey Mullen, Energy Makes America Great. Hey, Meg. Congress is now focused on determining America's response to the growing insurgency and anarchy in Iraq. How about that, Audrey? Who knew that the powers, who knew that the commander-in-chief powers had suddenly been vested in the Congress? Now, the Congress does have the power to declare war, but really Congress hasn't shown much interest in using that power since about 1941. Just saying. Congress is now focused on determining America's response to the growing insurgency and anarchy in Iraq. In addition to upsetting an already unstable government, the insurgents... See, they tip their hands. The insurgents in northern Iraq pose a threat to the... oil supply! Potentially causing economic upheaval, Iraq had become the second largest oil producer in OPEC, and its growing supply from proven reserves was Iraq's most stable asset. The United States uses 300,000 barrels of Iraqi oil daily. The United States should be able to make up Iraq's shortfall, but it looks unlikely. Domestic oil production from private lands is at a high, but much of our domestic reserves are on federal lands. The nonpartisan Congressional Research Service found that, quote, it takes 41% longer to process an application for permit to drill in 2011 than it did in 2006. Getting a permit on federal lands takes an average of 194 days compared to a few days to a month on state lands. The Obama administration approved the fewest drilling permits since 2002. Additionally, it has sold the lowest amount of oil and gas leases since 1988. Why is this happening? Because of the lobbying efforts of environmental groups. Oh, please. Really? Honest to Jesus. Yeah. You can try to convince somebody else that the Sierra Club, NRDC, Greenpeace, et al. Can out-lobby ExxonMobil and the American Petroleum Institute. You can try that on somebody else, because it's not going to work here. Save the last gray wolf. We can only hope that Congress and the White House will choose a proactive America First response in light of the developments in Iraq and the threat it poses to our oil supply. And then it goes on, and they've got a guest that they want me to interview, and here's an article. Can the U.S. fill the gap of potential oil losses from Iraq? It is time to realize that the altruistic-sounding claims of environmental lobbyists do not have America's interests at heart. How about that? When we go into, and I'm not a lobbyist, mind you. I'm just a citizen who happens to have family that's been directly impacted by mountaintop removal, friends who have been directly impacted by mountaintop removal, friends who are in graves because of mountaintop removal. But when we go in begging for mountaintop removal to be ended, we're not acting with America's best interests at heart. If, of course, you define America's best interests as the coal, oil, and gas industry, which is what the Republican Party, the conservatives, the libertarians, John Birchers, Klansmen, etc. That's how they define it. Remember what the West Virginia Coal Association said about methyl chlorohexane methanol when 10,000 gallons of it got dumped in the public water supply? If it's good enough to wash coal, it's good enough to wash me. Mm-hmm. But those wily, inscrutable environmental lobbyists are ruining everybody's fun. And soon we'll sit in the dark and live in a cardboard box and poop in a bucket. Jesus. Titanic intellects. Indeed. and plenty, plenty, plenty of examples thereof. Now, you know, of course, that, we had that little moment there of is Hillary more satanic than Barack Obama or less? And you know, I'm sure you've seen the news from earlier today that this guy who was said to be behind the attacks on Benghazi has been captured. He's been captured and taken out to a U.S. Navy vessel cruising somewhere off the North African coast. And you just wouldn't want to be him right now. But over there on Fox News Radio TV Rwanda, they know why that was announced today. Absolutely they do. I mean, you don't just go out there and capture the guy who dreamed up Benghazi! Because you can, never mind the fact that there are news stories out there where this guy's been interviewed, living in pretty much plain sight for a very long time. Never mind that. Ansar al-Sharia is the organization he commands, and the guy's name is Ahmad Abu Katala. Well, enter Pete Hegseth. He's a Fox News analyst. Okay, Pete, let's get to analyzing.
So hopefully they are garnering intelligence. I think we have to be pleased that this guy obviously is apprehended. We all have questions about the timing and the real...
Right, for the reasons Kimberly mentioned.
And hey, but you got Delta operators and the FBI guys that did an unbelievable operation here to pull this guy without a shot fired. That's a testament to the skills of our guys.
But we've got questions about the timing. What kind of questions?
Have the former Secretary of State, who's in the middle of a really highly high-profile book tour, and I think this is convenient for her to shift the talking points from some of the things that she's been discussing. The other thing that I find really curious, the President has been very careful from the beginning not to label this a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I think that is politically motivated, but we're not calling him an alleged terrorist suspect. We're not calling him a terrorist. And in the war on terror, you know, obviously he's not necessarily held as a criminal. He can be a criminal combatant.
Well, by the same token, we also don't call Jared Miller. We haven't who shot a couple of cops and covered them in "Don't Read to Me" flags. We're not calling him a terrorist either. So, I mean,
something clearly changed in the calculus of the United States, and I think a lot of it does have to do with the State Department. I think this thing needs to be tied in a bow for certain individuals to have a clean break from an incident that has become and will...
Wait, if you're tying something in a bow, how are you having a clean break? I think we're having a metaphor crisis on the set here.
Will continue to be a scandal and an anchor around a certain individual's neck who may want to run for president.
Well,
and so there's
having an interview today.
Who's might just
News
be having what a great thing to announce on an interview tonight at Fox News that the perpetrators have been brought to justice.
You got that? The entire universe. I mean, this is no longer a heliocentric world. This is a Fox-centric universe. Those inscrutable America haters over at the White House deliberately went and captured this guy because they knew that she was going to be sitting down for an interview at Fox News Radio TV Rwanda this evening. Probably already happened by now. Ooh, how inscrutable.
All too neat, and it's too cute, and I want to be grateful. I always want to give the benefit of the doubt to our authorities, but in this case, it feels too neat on the timeline.
I'd give the benefit.
It's too neat. It's too tidy. Whatever shall we do?
Benefit of the doubt, certainly to special forces and law enforcement who are involved. I mean, they're out there doing their job, but I do question some of the political motivations. And, you know, the
Okay, sister. which political motivations do you question? Because your pathetic excuse for a news network has been screaming about Benghazi for over, a year-ish. A little less than a year, maybe. Okay, you've been howling. There was, of course, the report, and we covered it. We talked about it in depth here on this program back in, oh, God, what was it? September, October of 2012, when word leaked that it was going to be turned into a political talking point, Benghazi, that is. And, of course, because they are nothing but a mouthpiece for the teabaggers and the Republican National Committee, they were in on the process and down with it and the full stakeholders. But she questions the political motivations. How about maybe the political motivation would be to make sure we've got an absolute lead pipe cinch ID on this guy and then go take him down? Because, see, I remember way back when we started our little misadventure in Afghanistan, and we pretty much knew where Osama bin Laden was, but the Bush administration let him get away. Now, that's not me because I'm some crazy liberal. That's pretty much an established fact. He scampered off. Brave bin Laden ran away. No, bravely ran away, away. I didn't. Some nights this is just like 16 tons. Oh, but it gets worse. Sure it does. Absolutely. We wouldn't be having any fun at all if we didn't check in with that proud son of Stanford University, Brian Fisher. Brian Fisher, well, in Brian Fisher's world, I guess Dinesh D'Souza is just some sort of a lightweight who won't really tell the truth. And anytime you've got a Brian Fisher clip, you know, from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan, and the screen cap photo says, "Caller on the phone," you know you've got a winner. Thanks again, of course, always, to our dear friends over at Right Wing Watch who take one for the team and are forever pulling these clips. And Jesus, I hope they get a daily bourbon allotment or something, or maybe just a daily, who knows, Xanax, Ativan, Valium, cannabis allotment for putting up with this stuff. Ay, ay, ay. But, dude, yes, of course, let's check in with Brian Fisher.
Unfortunately, this is coming from my Christian perspective, Sharia law is probably preferable to what we have right now, the blatant
Okay, now, we understand this is coming from his Christian perspective, which means he understands probably almost nothing about actual Christianity. He knows nothing about how the New Testament canon came into being. He doesn't know anything about the textual criticism involved with the New Testament and even like those Pauline letters that weren't written by Paul or why John is so psychotically different from Matthew, Mark, and Luke. He's just got a Christian perspective that's been given to him by some guy who probably is utterly defeated by shoelaces every Sunday morning. I didn't know they made Velcro dress shoes, but they probably do. Let's check in with his Christian perspective again.
And from my Christian perspective, Sharia law is probably preferable to what we have right now. The blatant sexuality, the killing of babies, they don't allow that in Sharia law. So as far as that's concerned, they're probably a little bit more just than we are.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, Stephen, is that when Muslims around the world complain about the United States, they always talk about the decadence, and one of the main things they mention is the amount of pornography that is produced in the United States and then shipped overseas.
Or shipped into the area of this country commonly referred to as Jesus Land, because, for instance, we know that the single highest per capita consumption of porn happens in, drumroll, anybody? Heathen Massachusetts? Damned Washington State? Corrupt California? Utah? Alabama's second. I don't know how we've got time to export it the way they consume it. But I'm sorry, Brian, you were saying?
That is produced in the United States and then shipped overseas. And so they rightly accuse the United States of corrupting the morality of the entire world. And it's just embarrassing, it's humiliating that we have given them that. How do we argue against that? We can't. I mean, when they go out there and say the United States is the great Satan because of all the pornography it produces, how do you argue against that? Because,
well, Brian, the way you argue against that is to understand that some fundamentalist monotheist in the Hindu Kush considers being able to see a nose hair on a female pornography. I mean, honest to God. Oh, I swear I saw the sole of her foot. Pardon me. I'll have to be disappearing for a moment. I'll be back. Have you a Kleenex and some lotion? I mean, there's pornography and there's pornography. Those guys don't need deep throat. They just need visible ankle. Titanic intellects.
Because they are right that is the work of Satan. We're producing it. We're distributing it all around the world. They have every right to complain about that. So again, as
Victoria's Secret catalogs in Islamabad. Those aren't angels. Those are demons!
We've drifted from our cultural moorings, from our values. We're creating problems for ourselves as well as for the rest of the world. All right, that's an excellent call, Stephen. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and like I said, thank you, Right Wing Watch. A little observation about B. Fisher. He probably would be perfectly happy. With Sharia law. Because Sharia law is really not that far different from Old Testament law. I mean, there's stonings and people getting chopped on and thrown outside the city gates, and you can eat this, but you can't eat that, and right. No pulled pig barbecue. Can't have it. So there we go. And Brian Fisher is the kind of he really has no morals. If by some wild happenstance there should happen to be Sharia law arrive in the United States, you know who the first one to throw the rug down, bow toward Mecca, and holler Allahu Akbar would be? Brian Fisher. Oh, no, you, me, the normal people, they'd have to drag us off and start lopping off our little old pumpkin heads. But the Brian Fishers and the Joel Osteens, one question, hey, can I still fundraise? I mean, I'll grow the beard, I'll get the headgear, all the garb, but I'm great on TV, and can I still fundraise? I can? Oh, there's no God but God, there's no God but God, and Muhammad's his prophet. What's the problem? Yeah, Marty, you've got a point. No, Bob. To see the sole of a woman's foot typically causes her family to try stoning her to death. Which, incidentally, is coming to America soon enough, courtesy of the Brian Fishers of the world. You're absolutely right, Marty. Todd, with an interesting observation regarding Brian Fisher's porn allegations. So people all this is from the chat room. So people all around the world are watching it and going to hell. Doesn't there have to be a demand for in order for there to be a supply? I mean, isn't that capitalism? Todd asks, and why? Yes, Todd. Yes, that is capitalism. How about that? You know, it's kind of interesting that Dinesh D'Souza, going back to him for just a minute, got popped for making straw man political donations. I don't know if you noticed, but yesterday the Supreme Court of the United States, in what is described as a divided opinion, they're all divided opinions, but the Supreme Court of the United States actually upheld a federal law that makes it a crime for one person to buy a gun for another and then lie to the dealer about who the gun is for. It's called straw man purchases. Now, Antonin Scalia was in an apoplectic frenzy about that. Oh, what did Fat Tony say? Oh, shoot. Yeah, it was John Roberts, Fat Tony Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Sammy Alito. Wait. R-A-T-S. Son of a gun! Rats! The rats dissented. Saying that... Well, you know, we're destroying freedom. But yesterday, straw gun purchase. Oddly enough, what happens when... Because, see, there really is a public policy reason for making these things illegal, because we have problems. We have problems with firearms in this country. For instance, folks can come down from, say, Detroit to Huntington, West Virginia, and they can bring a big old boatload of pills, smack, crack, hack, jack, pack, whatever. And they can engage in some good old-fashioned capitalism down in Huntington, selling off the smack, jack, crack, hack, pills, whatever. And with that money, turning around and getting somebody to go and buy some guns, which you can buy more easily in this state than you can buy some other things. It is easier in this state, for instance, to buy a gun than, or to find a place to buy a gun than to find a place to buy a sex toy. So you can't, but it's easier to buy the gun. And then they buy the guns, and the West Virginian hands the guns over to the guy from Detroit, and the guy from Detroit goes back to Detroit with lots of guns, which theoretically we would like to not happen. But, no, the rats say that that's destroying freedom. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Interesting, though. Interesting just the same. Oh, my God. It's Titanic Tuesday, and I got a feeling that it's going to stay Titanic for a while, but we'll take a break from the filibobster, seeing as how we've gotten to the top of the hour here. If you would like to help out to keep this entire little effort going, you are more than welcome to jump in and to participate in the fundraising efforts. You know, no, nothing's getting sold here. All we're doing is trying to keep a community together. So maybe reach out. You know, it doesn't matter. $5, $10, whatever. You want to set up a subscription so that just same time every month, $5, $10, whatever, $50. I don't care. Comes out, then that makes this thing a little bit more sustainable down the road. PayPal button or a traditional mail address is fine, either way. Boss man Wayne is on the lookout, and I've told him that he doesn't necessarily need to take his spider-proof gloves with him, based upon a couple of emails I've had lately. So we will. We'll take a little break. A reminder, until we get the Comrex fixed, which hopefully will happen, maybe before the summer's out. Until that time, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178 is the contact number for the program. And you're welcome to participate in it, because this is, after all, conversation radio. Also, if you want to just go via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. If you've never sent a contact request, just send it. I'll clear it right quick. And if you have and you want to jump in, that's fine too. We've got the Green News Report on the way. Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen. This will be the only Green News Report for the week. Apparently they're heading out of town. Brad says on family business, so I hope it's a good thing. A little bumper in honor of the heat and the bright, shiny skies we've had of late. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
Tuesday, June 17, 2014.
As the summer begins to heat up, deadly weather is striking the heartland in a huge way.
Look put it dramatically. Picture.
Never before seen twin tornadoes slam Nebraska.
I don't remember anybody saying that the moon wasn't there or that it was made of cheese.
Obama openly mocks climate deniers. New study finds, again, economic benefits of EPA regulations outweigh the costs. Plus, the billionaire Koch brothers Cochtopus grows a new tentacle.
All of those tentacles and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
There's some who also duck the question. When they're asked about climate change, they say, hey, look, I'm not a scientist.
Well, let's let Barack Obama have the snarky comment today.
And I'll translate that for you. What that really means is, I know that man-made climate change really is happening, but if I admit it, I'll be run out of town by a radical fringe that thinks climate science is a liberal plot, so I'm not going to admit it.
Well done, Mr. President. This is your Green News Report.
I'm not a scientist either, but we've got some really good ones at NASA.
Okay, Desi Doyen, before we get started today, a little bit of news in the background under the radar. It looks like the Republicans could be setting up for another potential government shutdown. They have snuck in an amendment to the must-pass appropriations bill that would undo the Obama EPA's new standards for reducing carbon emissions by 30% by 2030. And obviously, Obama can't sign it, so if it stays in there, we could be looking at another government shutdown in a couple of months.
Yep, there. Threatening to take those hostages again. We'll see if Obama and the Democrats in Congress take the bait.
What else do you have for us today? As insane, crazy weather is breaking out across the Midwest and crazy heat in the East.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. Bizarre. Twin tornadoes that hit northeastern Nebraska Monday afternoon. They destroyed much of the tiny town of Pilger, Nebraska, and killed at least two people. It was part of a string of multiple tornadoes that pummeled the region. That was like nothing anyone had ever seen.
I haven't met or heard from anyone alive, any meteorologist that's ever seen anything like this.
That was meteorologist Bill Cairns of MSNBC. Now, while some small spin-off tornadoes do occasionally occur, meteorologists say that these double full-size tornadoes that close together is not normal.
Not only not normal, but not even understood. This comment from Cairns was a bit ominous, to say the least.
To have two huge tornadoes that close to each other had never, ever been recorded in our country's history, as far as any of us can remember. We're not even sure the physics of it to see how it's even possible.
So we've got weather patterns now that meteorologists don't even understand. That's how much our climate seems to be changing. I think that's an ominous and dark comment from the weatherman.
Yeah, we don't even know how the physics would work. That's not scary at all. Watch out, the Cochtopus is growing a new tentacle. The Daily Beast reports that the billionaire Koch brothers are adding a new nonprofit front group to their shadowy network of big money nonprofit front groups to kill off clean energy. The new strategy includes a super PAC that plans to spend at least $15 million in the 2014 midterm elections alone just on attacking climate change activists and undermining the EPA's new emissions pollution standards. They're going to attempt to convince Americans that dirty energy is the best energy.
Oh, bring it on, Cokes.
And remember, polluting industries and their friends in Congress always cry wolf about pollution regulations, and they're always wrong. A new study by the Federal Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which reports on the economic impact of federal regulations, that new study finds that major EPA standards implemented just since 2003 have yielded a minimum of $215 billion in economic benefits, 2 to 3 times the cost of any of those measures. Finally, President Obama is now openly mocking the climate change denial industry and their friends in Congress.
It's pretty rare that you'll encounter somebody who says the problem you're trying to solve simply doesn't exist. When President Kennedy set us on a course for the moon, there were a number of people who made a serious case that it wouldn't be worth it. It was going to be too expensive, it was going to be too hard, it would take too long. But nobody ignored the science. I don't remember anybody saying that the moon wasn't there or that it was made of cheese. Today's Congress, though, is full of folks who stubbornly and automatically reject the scientific evidence about climate change. They will tell you it is a hoax or a fad. One member of Congress actually says the world is cooling. There was one member of Congress who mentioned a theory involving dinosaur flatulence, which I won't get into, but...
Wow, who spiked his coffee today?
I know. That was his commencement speech to the University of California, Irvine, over the weekend. He devoted the entire speech to the danger of man-made climate change. He announced a new fund to help cities recover from and prepare for the increase in extreme weather events, and he challenged the new graduates to lead the way in fighting against global warming.
I'm just glad he's calling out the liars for what they are. Liars. Thank you, Mr. President. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. And you can find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You know, it's nice to be periodically reminded just how doggone good REM was. 13 minutes past the hour on this, the 17th day of June 2014, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, working toward achieving our daily fundraising goal. Help, however it comes in, is deeply appreciated. Deeply, indeed. Let's go over to the Skype line and have a little chat with Jeremy from Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Hey, I was turning around the web tubes this last Friday, and I happened to notice that Hillary Clinton was out making some of her non-stump speech stump speeches, and she had dropped in a piece about the transgender community and the LGBT community and how I guess she's supporting them and thinks that medical treatment should be afforded to them and given just like any other medical case, which I agree with. I think it's really important to save them on the lots. Well, wouldn't you know, along stumbled some Ron Paul following libertarian that I used to go to school with.
No.
Yeah, and he goes into basically a rant about Hillary Clinton's 10 times worse than Obama and how she's a horrible person and how she let
Did he get around to she'll be the most liberal president we've ever had?
He tried to get that in there, but he really, really spit on the whole Benghazi. She got 4 Americans killed. And, you know, like I sent him back a private message and said, what about the 3,000, 4,000 that got killed on 9/11 and Bush and Cheney are still out doing book tours and touring the United States and playing golf and laughing at us all? And just kind of let that comment go. He didn't say anything about that. Well, he brought up something in her past speech and says that he's all for people being treated equally, but he doesn't want any one group to have special rights. So right there I told him in that message, I said, you just proved yourself a liar. I said, you just contradicted yourself. No, she's not pushing for special rights. She's pushing for people not to be killed because of who they are.
Which, in right-wing world, that's a special right. Because, after all, you should probably be stoned to death outside the city gates for yea, verily, putting on the raiment of a woman when thou art a man. Remember,
right.
Sharia law, Old Testament law, not a lot of difference, and because, well, it's kind of Bronze Age-y, isn't it? But I mean, they want that. They say it openly. Where was that candidate from? Oklahoma Stan, Jeremy, who declared that he would be okay with executing gay people. And you know what? If you're down with executing gay people, you're probably going to execute the trans community just twice as hard.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure you would. I mean, that was the whole conversation out of this guy was almost as sickening as the whole the Rush clip you paid a couple weeks back there, where Rush had a caller call in from the trans community, and basically Rush kind of played with him like a cat on a or around the string with a cat on the other end, kind of just toyed around, bopping around like, well, I didn't know, playing the innocent victim in the whole thing. Like, he was suddenly the one under attack because the guy called in interestingly enough to give him constructive criticism, but he's still trying to turn it into like this horrible, awkward thing. Like, oh, I didn't know. I'm not doing it wrong. I didn't know it was a slur. same idea. I mean, these people never cease to amaze me with their stupidity and their uncaring, and they're just basically they're just plain cruelty to other citizens in America, other human beings. Well, guising as I'm all for everyone to be treated equally, we shouldn't have special rights.
That's one of their favorite arguments, because if you state affirmatively that it's not okay to suppress someone's, say, right to vote because of the color of their skin, then that's a special right. It's the same mindset, Jeremy, that obtained and continues to obtain behind hate crimes legislation. Well, now we're punishing thought crimes. We're making a special class of victims. Well, I tell you what, Cephas, the next time you're taken out and crucified on a barbed wire fence for being straight, we'll have that conversation, okay?
Right. Since this guy's a libtard, we mentioned that thing about I'm not for people having special rights or something. Certain groups having special rights. I tied back, and of course he's trying to pretend like he was talking about it. Said, oh, the Beckerhead in his argument about not being the N word and the F word anymore. I get it. That's what you're all about. And he was like, what? Like,
no, you got to do that. Wait. You got to do that again. And he said.
He said, what? basically, he said back, and I just at that point I said, this conversation over is not worth my time, and I just kind of I let it go because obviously,
honest to God, Jeremy, if we had a full production staff, somebody would be pulling that clip out, and I'd just put it in the little clip player, and we what? Just whenever, because there's never going to be it's that will never get old. What?
He's not even from he's from the north like I am. He's from Connecticut, but still, I could see it in the way he typed it, kind of like, he didn't have a clue or wanted to like disavow of that side of the fence and that argument that had been made so clearly across mass media, pointing out the ignorance in that whole conversation, especially with that coward who was talking to Glenn Beck. At least Glenn Beck's face, you could see him. The other guy had him fucking blurred out, so you couldn't see who he was making these stupid statements.
Oh God, yeah. Right, because an army of liberal progressives are going to descend upon him and give him a good talking to. Because you know we're forever being accused of this stuff, Jeremy. Maybe we would go and find him and attempt to empathize and understand why he is the way he is. And well, we can't have that now, can we?
I would like to say I'm a peaceful person and I wish him no ill, but that wouldn't necessarily be true. I'm actually, I think, madder at him because he blurred his face. He can say all the ignorant shit he wants because I don't believe in it, and I just kind of laugh it off or cry, on the other hand, at it because it's so stupid.
Well, maybe that's why his face is blurred out, because he doesn't want people pointing, oh, you're the guy that said stuff that was that stuff. Oh, you're that moron.
That's it.
Look at us. We've problem solved on the horn, Jeremy. Dude does not want to be the Get a Brain Morans meme guy for the 2000 for the second decade of the 21st century. That's what it was.
And that might be why his face was blurred out, because he didn't want to be put out there as something to be used against them in the next election. But the whole thing kind of came back full circle to me because of Saturday night we had my mom and her husband, who's known me for 30 years of my life, so I guess I'll call my father at this point, but I've mentioned he's Jamaican, so he looks African-American. Well, he is African-American, probably by descent, somewhere down the long, long line of where slaves came from and stuff and moved around the trades. But I mentioned that to them, and I think my mom saw it, but I don't think he saw it. He's very sensitive to that kind of stuff. And I looked for Volt, and I said, this guy he had on, just he looked blatantly at going back at the camera with a blurred face and said that he straight up had a gay person say, we're the new niggers. I said, come on. I said, you're taking two different things and throwing them right together to give it the most potent punch you can.
Oh, sure.
And I said, this went on over mass media and anyone that carried the Blaze radio station or the Blaze live TV channel. And since it's a customer channel that people request, they pay for it, it's kind of like HBO, but it still was put out there.
Well, consider, I mean, this is where we are. It's the second decade of the 21st century. We ought to be moving toward, shouldn't the program out there that winds up breeding con already be well underway or something? Con! No, we're going backwards. It's the second decade of the 21st freaking century, and Pappy McDaniel down in Mississippi Stan is gladly cashing checks from a former member of the Ku Klux Klan. I guess that makes Pappy McDaniel the Klandidate.
No, that's a good one. That gave me a good chuckle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you might like that. Klandidate. So whenever we say Mississippi Senate candidate Pappy McDaniel, we refer to him henceforward as the Klandidate because he's cashing checks from a guy named Carl Ford. Carl Ford is a former Klansman. Carl Ford is a member of the League of the South, which is what Klansmen join who know how to tie a necktie in something besides the noose pattern. You know, he's worked his way up to a half Windsor and a full Windsor and maybe a slipknot. Well, that's kind of noosey. But Carl Ford's been he's written a check to Chris Pappy McDaniel, the reform candidate. And he's not even shy about it. This guy has written checks to, Rand Paul. He's written a check to Ron Paul. He's written a check to representing Alan Nunnally of Mississippi Stan. How about that? He wrote a check to former Virginia Senator Jim Webb. He tries to shy away from some of his clannish tendencies, but no, not me. I'm a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Now, never mind the fact that the Sons of Confederate Veterans refer to the Civil War as the Second American Revolution. I guess they're sort of defaulting away from. Well, they only call it the War of Northern Aggression when they know that nobody's in the room that's not supposed to be.
Well, I was going to say, let's not forget that the KKK and such organizations started out with treasonous bastards from the South who couldn't deal with the fact that they had lost a war for their right to
domestic
people. You know?
Domestic terrorists led by Nathan Bedford Forrest, absolutely.
Right.
And I don't know
Bob, well, I'll let someone else get on here because it's getting late, but just so you know, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm hearing like bits and pieces of you are breaking up quite horrendously.
I don't know. I don't think I'm overdriving. Nothing.
Because you're I get a good stream, a couple sentences out of you, and then like a couple sentences, you start almost like you're fading out. And I have a pretty good signal, so I don't think it's on my end. I don't know.
Might be. Haven't had any other complaints, but we'll certainly look into it. And now I'm sure we'll probably start getting emails. So,
all right.
Take it easy, Jeremy. Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. Now. Calling from Vermont, our buddy Jeremy. Let's see. And I suspect this is one of the things that comes with working with Skype. You see names and numbers and stuff. Where before we didn't. I think this might be Bill. Is that you, Bill?
Yeah, somebody else.
How about that? How you doing?
What's a good word?
Little or nothing. The good word would be a little bit more air conditioning here in the south facing Horn Studio sauna, but well, you know, a little froggy
well,
would like.
It's hot in here, and I'm running two air conditioners. You see, my one buddy went out and picked them up for me, which I don't want to get into detail on it, but well, still doesn't seem too cool in here.
Well, this is the kind of day when air conditioners labor.
Yeah, well, I'm glad something around here does. I sure don't anymore. But what's new and exciting? Have we got any closer to deciding who we're gonna kick this time around?
Or who's gonna kick ours?
Well, yeah. Well, please don't mention that. We don't talk about the possible truth around here.
I know. The right wing still wants to go merrily marching back into Iraq and secure some freedom and I don't know, you may have heard that a little bit ago, the right wing outfit that's hollering, "Oh, but how will we ever make up a shortfall in the Iraq oil?" Jesus.
Yeah, well, I was talking to someone today who was pretty close to the organization. And I don't mean the organization with the guy's last name ends in a vowel, not that organization. And one that my uncle used to work for. But there's a possibility that there's been an arms deal, but I never heard much about an arms deal between us and Iraq.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about that last night.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is the warm up for that.
Or it may be.
I'd like to know
I was going to say that warm up, or it may be the effort to defend it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You got to have the. Yeah, it's true. You got to have the. You got to play the. This is like either billiards or that great. Putt-putt golf game where you got to start playing the angles, you know. That's how that works. Do you ever see that when they were running putt-putt golf on Saturday afternoon as a
TV show? As a TV show, yes.
Yeah. Well, I did learn an awful lot from, you know. That was a popular thing to do after this one. I'm from an era when there was coffee houses being run by churches. But there were pretty left-wing coffee houses, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I've seen people. But we used to go out and shoot that stuff, just kill time at the end of the night and walk around chasing a little white ball around. Oh, well. Of course, a few years later, we were out there chasing a hangover. You know, it's a difference in time and place. So you feel that this is potentially a... This is just basically a lead-in for the right to sell arms, you know, to keep and sell, to own and sell.
Or the right to arm bears.
Yeah, the right to arm bears. I guess I like that one too. Because I mean, I can't seem to get a clean, not even a dirty interpretation news-wise of. What's going on over there? Are we starting to put people in over there?
No, we've just sent. Now we spent $1 billion on that embassy, and apparently we have sent 275 members of the military over to beef up security there, but with the possibility of, I guess, bugging out and heading for Basra?
Yeah. So things have not really improved. I haven't been able to pick up any. I wish my one buddy offered me a. And I should call him and see if he still has it. We used to use shortwave radios, you know, for this kind of stuff. And places like the BBC and. Hell, I heard stuff going on in the last Arab-Israeli war, the Yom Kippur War. I was picking stuff up off the British network, talk about that was the first place I began to learn that the Israelis had trapped the, about 150,000 men, Egyptian force that had broken through the line there on the Yom Kippur War.
Mm-hmm.
They had been circled and cut off, and I prefer third day over the shortwave system, or the, I don't know what you'd call it anymore. It's tough. You can get good entertainment off the radio, but I can't seem to find a station that has real. Of course, is there such a thing as hard news anymore, or is it all networked out?
Fascinating is when you get a chance to read real journalism, and there is some being done. But when you do run across it, and of course you have challenges related to your vision.
Yeah,
it is so shocking, because we have become absolutely inured to the idea that all we're going to get in the way of news in the United States is the miserable drivel that comes, as Frank Zappa said, sliming out of the TV set in the form of Fox or CNN or, what have you.
Yeah, I do miss, to tell you who I miss is Rachel Maddow. I used to enjoy, but in this building they charge you for cable, and the guys that helped me move, they decided to leave my TV back in the apartment. Well, it was too old. It still worked. What do you mean it's too old? Of course, they're talking to a guy who spent too many hours, Bob, watching TV out of a mirror that was in front of the TV as you try to service something in there.
Yeah. But you do have internet, Bill, and if you're depending on what your interface is like, you can watch all, or at least listen to all of Rachel online. You can't do it live.
I have a good friend of ours who's a couple of good friends in the family who are to the south of me. That somebody's going to have to score and get that straightened out for me, because I do miss some of that kind of stuff. I'd like to hear Rachel. I find out a station I catch out of Chicago, Schultz seems to be missing.
Yeah, he's left the radio.
He did leave radio. Is TV only, or is he...
I think he's gone... There was a plan. I think he's gone TV only, and that shift has taken place.
Let's see, if it was me, I'd be doing a lake up in the North Woods only. And that's me sitting on a boat wrestling with that smallmouth of that walleye. That would be my fact that I would
walleye.
Enjoy, as long as somebody else could set up the rod for me, I do miss that. My last trip to Chautauqua, I was out in the evening and caught two back-to-back smallmouth. One was 7 and the other was approaching 7. I never realized these might be the last fish I'm going to catch in my life, And, of course, I could thank a guy from a neighboring state of Kentucky taught me how to do that kind of stuff. Because he was a master. Matt, I came home from a playing job one night, and he had a 6-pound and a 5-8 or something largemouth in a bucket that he had brought home. Of course, he did have the audacity to eat them, Bob. Is that the wrong thing to do with?
Well, trying to think if I've ever eaten freshwater bass. I've had sea bass.
Well, I'll tell you what, a largemouth that big, I think I would have... One of the boots I caught, in the cartoon style of fishing, you remember that.
Would have been more tasty?
Yeah, that catching boots. I probably would have rather eaten that than eating the bass. And to me, as a sport fisherman, a largemouth for something you return to the lake. But somebody else had the pleasure of catching it, of going through the activity of catching it, of fooling it and bringing it in.
Yeah.
But getting back to what we were saying, I should talk to my one buddy about his shortwave receiver, because I used to enjoy some of the BBC. I knew that the Egyptian army had been boxed in. In that 70, in that Yom Kippur War, they had been counterattacked and boxed. And And that's when I think I was talking to Sparky one night on the Friday Night Show, on the Front Porch segment.
Yeah.
That I had heard, I woke up at 6 o'clock to a report that the SAC was on alert.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I heard it at 6 o'clock news and it never came back on. And a family member who was over there, I don't know what you'd want to call it, doing prep work on B-52s. He told me I heard what I thought I heard. You know, I wasn't hallucinating.
Right.
Thing. It wasn't the Beef Eater or the Tanqueray doing the talk.
Beef Eater and Tanqueray at the same time?
No, thank you.
I was told never to mix my liquors.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you were a blues musician from that era and from the light shade, so to speak, and we're taking a walk down a road that had not been part of your family's road before you started doing it, gin was what you were expected to drink. Isn't that what all blues singers drank?
I don't know. I mean, I always thought there was a bunch of brown liquor drinkers out there.
Well, I later switched, got off of gin and started drinking some of the brown stuff. But I drank so little after a certain age. Well, first of all, even the gin, I started getting very cautious because you couldn't open, you get in your car door and slam the door, there's a siren going off behind you. Hell, I got stopped at 11 something in the morning on my way to my doctor's office, and the cop pulled me over and said, have you been drinking? And I just calmly asked him, no, but if he was buying, I might.
Oh, and by the way, you just got a note in from Jim. He says, please ask Bill, recipe for carp?
No. I'll tell you what. I was with my ex, my second wife, and she brought in about an 18-pound carp. Of course, we didn't eat it. But my God, I never saw somebody, you know, you're talking about a freshwater fish.
Yeah, that's an ugly
that's
fish.
Pretty damn big.
That is an ugly what? Fish.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that, somebody listening could inform me, but if I remember somewhere many years ago, I read that there was a big fight amongst the states as to who got how many of those critters. They were brought in here for a purpose. As a food source. Now, I may be off my nut, but I think I remember reading about that. This happened in the 18th.
Well, they're native to Europe and Asia. I know that. They're a non-native species in American waters.
Yeah. I know somebody brought them over here. They are, I mean, I know guys who go fishing for them just for the pure pleasure of fighting the fish. Was I never did any ocean fishing either. I never oh yes I did on a trip to the Outer Banks. They took us out off of Hatteras in the wreck, the shipwreck area, and we caught flounder. Flounder's a good eating fish, but it's very similar to fishing for perch in Lake Erie, where you drop the line down and crank it up about three turns and you sit. And bang, they start hitting. And, I've seen guys come in with, it was a 50 fish limit on perch per customer. So we could eat. I'm still going nuts trying to get out of here with some of my friends to go have a fish dinner somewhere, but you know, some of those restaurants that I used to be able to go to easily, they had good fish, but I can't seem to get out of here. All because most of my friends who aren't fishermen don't like to eat the damn things. I guess you guys don't know, do you? And some of the stuff that you can pick up in the supermarket, I sometimes wonder about some of it, you know, the farm breeding so much of it. Well, even I usually get over the weekend, my piano player, my old ex-piano player goes and picks up a big piece of salmon for me to to indulge in. But, but at least there's no more, the war threats have settled down some. We're not talking as much. Basically, we're not being warned about the fact that we're being yelled at by people. I hear, oh yeah, Wolfowitz. I heard that guy.
I was going to say, probably the most obnoxious statement to be had regarding Iraq, if it wasn't Tony Blair's, which we talked about last night, it kind of has to be Mitt Romney's.
Oh, yeah, Mr. War Hero, yeah.
Bishop Willard checked in recently and said, we are on the verge of losing all we gained, all we fought for in Iraq. And I've seen some...
Oh, you like that we, yeah.
I've seen some pretty impressive excoriations of right-wing asshats, but the one that was written, what's his name? Here we go. A guy named Jim West, I think.
Ooh.
He's a veteran. He's a veteran by the name of Jim West.
Okay.
Oh, Jim Wright. Jim Wright. I'm sorry. He writes at a blog called Stone Kettle Station. And he said recently, like I said, I mean, this was a straight-up excoriation. He says, after all this all-we-fought-for business, he writes, oh, so it's we now, is it, Mitt? We. I must have missed you over there. But it was a busy place. We. The guy who helped set up a pro-draft rallies and yet somehow managed to avoid service in Vietnam is upset about losing what we fought for. We. And then he just says, yeah, fuck you, Mitt.
Good.
And he said, "And you're all welcome to quote me on that."
Yeah, it's about time somebody tells these guys that. You know, I tried to enlist at age 18, which was 1961, and they said, well, "We don't need you. We don't want you." They were rejecting 53% of the Ohio people when they called in for physical in 1961. And you can figure out why, but I'm telling you real quick why. Too simple.
No war. Yeah, no war.
Because after the Korean War, they wanted to downsize it again as much as they could within reason. Although that's when they really went to work on the North American Treaty Organization. And for better or worse, because, Bob, I don't know how you feel about Mr. Stalin.
Not
from
kindly.
What you know about the man.
Not kindly.
Would you say just plain nuts?
No. I won't. I will not cut Joseph Stalin that kind of slack. He was not crazy. He was quite sane, and he was bloodthirsty.
Yeah, well, that's what I was exaggerating. But his activities were. He could get away with a lot more if he was nuts. You could understand it a lot more. I mean, if the capitalist, post-war capitalist, needed a boogeyman manufactured, could they do any better than Stalin?
No.
No, he was such a what a creep, you know, I mean, what a lowlife. Look at his track record. You know, they were still releasing. You know, they were at war against Japan for, what, 2-3 weeks? And they overran what was left of the falling apart Japanese army in Manchuria, you know.
Yep.
Because that army had, Kwantung Army it was called, I believe. There was nothing really left of it as far as, there was a framework, you know. This is a theory that why we kicked Kissing Chiang Kai-shek's ass. When everybody wanted to get the best of Stillwell, but you're a Stillwell guy,
yeah.
As far as knowing his career in World War II. Why did he refer to Chiang Kai-shek as the peanuts? Because we poured money. You know how much money we poured down that rat hole? in China? I mean, you know, you can tell me.
Oh, God.
I can't tell that high. I got my shoes on, you know? So, but he was, and God Almighty, there was a hardcore group of people who belonged to the Republican Party, basically, who was supporting this man. I mean, the Chinese Civil War, I'd love to get my hands on something that I could digest of that, the records, of the war record of that, you know. Because all I can remember is a big new radio announcement about 1949 that the Chiang Kai-shek had quit the mainland and grabbed Formosa for himself. So, and we poured, in fact, the Chinese army was had a lot of, in Korea, they had a lot of Thompson submachine gun bombs. How do you think they got those Thompsons?
Probably something similar to the way that that a certain Iraqi insurgency finds itself very well armed with American armaments now.
Well, yeah, well, this is what Chiang Kai-shek's men were handing over as they surrendered.
That's precisely my point. A whole lot of American armament has been dropped in the sand as the Iraqi army turned around and did the whole assholes and elbows thing while ripping off all vestiges of their uniforms.
Well, but the bottom line over there was a lot of these guys went into the Communist Army, and a lot of them fought in Korea, and when they were prisoners, at the end of that war, they had to go up through the Geneva Convention, and some of them had to testify in front of a Chinese Communist leader, why they wanted to go to Formosa, or Taiwan, rather than go back to China. And I guess at one or two points, Chinese POWs reached across the table and slapped the guy on the other side. And what was it, 21 Americans who stayed in China?
Is that what it
was? Kind of a big scandal. That's before your time, I know, and mine too, for that matter. But I read enough about it. For some reason, you had the phones breaking up. I have a hard time understanding you.
Hmm.
Are you there?
I'm right here.
Okay, yeah, it's come back a little, but it was fuzzing out pretty good. Sounded like some PA systems I was using over the years when money was tight, yes. Improved my voice that way, you know. My listening to the distortion in that guy's voice, yeah, it comes from that cheap microphone he's using. Oh, and harmonica players will tell you point blank that the one thing we used, we were using those round ball Shures that were made in Chicago in the late 40s because they had that tone quality.
Yeah, what is it? What is that, a 58? Because I've got a Beta 58. And Beta 58 is the microphone that Shure used to use to advertise in magazines and so forth. The picture would be of a mug of beer. And that Beta 58 would be upside down in it.
Yeah.
And you could take it out, shake it off, dry it off, and plug it up and go.
I have one somewhere. I bought a good wireless from, there were some good metal bands in Cleveland. There was one with the name of Breaker. Breaker. And they were from the suburbs of Cleveland, but they modeled their playing after a band called the Scorpions. You ever hear of that?
A little bit, yeah.
English metal band?
Metal band, the Scorpions.
Uh-huh. Because these guys, after 15 years of being broken up, were hired and did tours in Germany because of their sound was so based on the Scorpions. All I'll say is I was lucky enough in 65 to go to a place called Lake Erie College and catch the first Butterfield band and spent the breaks on face-to-face with Michael Bloomfield, because Michael loved to talk. You can dig him off the internet, too. That's one guy your son should check out. He was what a player he was. The guy's like, in fact, he was a big influence on the great Latin player from California.
Santana.
Was that guy's name?
Santana.
Yes, he was an influence on Santana. And
Bill, I'll tell you, Ferg is in a bit of a crisis right now because his guitar had to go back to the manufactory. We discovered.
What's he using?
He had a Martin. And we discovered a hairline crack in the back of it. And it grieved him, but I said, listen, send it back now because, you know, the cracks don't get better in guitars. And guitars don't get better for having a crack in them. So he's back to playing, he's back to playing a $100 Chinese guitar. And he just looks at me and says, Dad, this thing sucks.
Like the guys I worked with like the Les Pauls and the SGs.
Well, Ferg is right now, and I'm not pushing him in one direction or another. Right now, he's developing his chops on an acoustic guitar, and he's doing a really, really, really good job of it. I mean, I told him if we ever get to the point where we can follow through and do what I desperately want to do and just revamp this entire studio, I said, every time you come up with a lick, I'll sit you down and we'll record it. And just come up with a compendium of stuff that you play. Because he's not much into playing and singing stuff that he hears on the radio.
Yeah.
Because there's so much music going on inside his head.
Well, that's the way it should be.
Yeah, but it kind of makes it hard for him to sit down and, you know, he's not going to get a job in a bar where there's, no, play that Drunk on an Airplane song. No, really, there's a popular country song right now, or lately in the last few months, about getting drunk on an airplane because his woman done left him. I'm not kidding.
Well, there was a lot of crossover in the black and white field with Southern musicians. Awful lot of guys listening to each other. And that was one part of where America was really America, when the cross references of subculture stuff, you know, musical stuff in particular, played a big part. What I really liked, I had a synthesizer for a while that I liked. It was a little red kidney shaped thing that you could dial up amplifier sounds and you could run that through a PA, and being lazy, not wanting to carry a big amp, I got tired of carrying those Fenders around with me. They weighed a lot, you know.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And, I'm a lazy. But I also had responsibility for the PA, which was, at first PA was the old Shure, was a Vocal Master. Real crap. But it worked. I'll tell you what was a real fun job. We played a job in Case with a young lady whose father was a Broadway singing star. She played beautiful slide guitar, and she was extremely attractive, and her name was Bonnie Raitt. And we did two shows with her on us, two sets, you know, where they sold her, they turned the house between shows at an auditorium at Case Campus. It was a benefit for the Women's Indochina Peace Committee. I think it was 1975. And she was a pleasure to. And another one was a young woman named Minnie Riperton was with a band out of Chicago, and it was being handled by Marshall Stearns, who I think was, not Stearns, Chess, who was the son of Leonard Chess, who ran Chess Records. You played that at Bowling Green, and I'll leave you with a good laugh. It was a, what was the name of that band, Bob? Jesus. Isaac, where are you? You know, there's a man who knows this stuff in backward and forward. But she had Minnie had an extremely high voice. Loving You.
Yes.
No, it wasn't that one.
She could shatter glass.
But the funniest thing there was that I got off stage after introducing my guitar player to do a version of an instrumental that we loved by a guy working out of Cincinnati. It was a Chuck Berry of Memphis that was done by a white kid from Indiana who played in a lot in Cincinnati. Kid, hell, he's older than me, so. But anyway, I got off stage to let this guitar player play, and I misplaced. The drummer had moved the steps that I had got up on stage. It was about a 6-foot-high stage in the field house or one of those places. Bob, I'll tell you what, I took one step and like a cartoon disappeared from sight. I landed on my back thinking, geez, was I lucky I can still walk, you know?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Isaac did come through. The band that Minnie Riperton sang with was Rotary Connection.
Rotary Connection, yeah, we opened for them. That was if anything was something to look back with, luck and pride was the timing that I had going to open for people, go to Detroit and open up for Cream at what was the name of that club? It was a dance hall. We did like 3 or 4 jobs in Detroit at this darn dance hall that we opened up for Cream once, and then the next trip was Three Dog Night and Steppenwolf was lead. And I went back and we played with the MC5 in Detroit. And I had met the guys at MC5 in 1990, the year of the fires in Detroit. Because they were living in the burned-out area of Detroit. It was just, what a time to be doing it, you know, when you got these, because today some of these acts that were big, they're fighting for whatever they can get right now because they're old and beat up, you know. I know the feeling. Grandy Ballroom was the name of the place in Detroit on Grand River. And you know what, Bill,
by bringing up Minnie Riperton, you kind of opened a door here about a difference between America then and America now, because I've been just reading some biographical information on her.
Yeah, she had a lot of great fans.
She did not come from wealth. Her daddy was a Pullman porter. She was the youngest of 8 children, and early on showed a lot of precocious talent for the arts. Started out in dance, but her parents recognized her voice. The qualities of her voice, and as a child got her operatic voice training at Chicago's Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a story you hear in 2014. Maybe it does.
No.
But part of the re-stratification of American society is the fact that, you know, if you come from working class roots, by God, you're going to be working class people.
Well, I always look at why I ended up playing the type of music. Bob, I grew up between a housing project and a Catholic children's home for 4 years. And the music was there. My dad used to go hear a blind piano player here in Cleveland. What the hell was his name? It bothers me when I can't find people. I'll dig it out in a second and I'll let you go. But he was a great jazz piano player, and my dad used to see him all the time in the Because that was one of my biggest thrills. Take the old man to see Louis Armstrong, you know, for a Father's Day gift. That was couldn't have done much better for him. But the guy I'm looking for, what was his name? Let me keep sliding through this thing. It'll come up. He played at a place called Val's in the Alley, as they called it here. And, I can't find it. This goddamn computer of mine is so full of notes and such that great pianist. He never made a big name for himself except amongst musicians. He was totally blind and I'll be darned if I can find it, but it's here somewhere. It's just try to find the darn thing. And computers will drive me crazy someday. I'm convinced of it. Art Tatum was a guy. You ever hear of him?
That sounds off the top of my head. I can't.
He was one of these guys, and he'd show up. Well, when I was going home from high school one day on a trackless trolley, have you ever heard of those things? You know, rubber-tired buses that ran on electricity?
Yeah.
Terrible thing. Noisy as hell. Air pollution out the, you know, But they were putting a sign up on a little bar. This is 1956 fall. Just tonight, Ray Charles. And I said, oh, my, I'd like to see that, you know. It was just a little corner neighborhood bar. Ray was nothing. And, you know, he was nothing in what he became, you know. He was still doing stuff like Lonely Avenue, which is something I wish he could play. That was a heartbreaker with the Ray Levinson. Oh, well, what a time and a place to hear stuff. I don't know what it is today for kids. I don't know if they... I know they have different tastes. We just had a situation down here in Cleveland about 4 or 5 weeks ago over in suburban Lakewood where a bunch of these kids who were into the new age music, they had a near fight going, a near gang conflict. I said, my God, are we going back to the 50s? It's time for me to return to my childhood, I guess, because that was quite popular in those days, but... Anyway, at least I know we have not gone to war yet in Iraq. It's good to know, you know.
And hopefully we won't. I got a feeling that now I'm one of those people who holds the opinion that Barack Obama is in fact capable of being a stone cold killer. All presidents, by definition, with the exception lately of Jimmy Carter, have had that capacity. Comes with the job. But I don't think the right wing is going, because what they're trying to do is goad him into doing something stupid in Iraq and thereby legitimizing dim leader, okay, George Bush. And I don't think he's going to let himself be goaded into it. Hell, even the people who are leading the insurgency are trying to goad him into it. And if George Bush was in office, the stuff that these ISIS people have been putting out by way of press releases, well, hell, we'd have already attacked because George was that stupid.
Yeah.
Remember, the first World Trade Center attack that took place, what, 1993 during Bill Clinton's presidency? That thing was designed to goad the United States into a Middle East war. And Bill Clinton was smart enough not to take the bait. But, you know, George Bush, on the other hand, well, if his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a pissant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was. It was easy to sucker him in to a Middle Eastern quagmire.
Yeah, because I just don't think the American people. Well, there's been a lot of people trying to goad us into something to save the Ukraine. So they can save the Ukraine for businessmen to go in there and make a lot of money off of what may be under the ground.
Right, and make Ukraine safe for capitalism, if not democracy.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole... And to me, I had that old-fashioned idea that I imagine Jim, our friend Jim from your neighborhood, would say that the Ukraine has been part of the Russian orbit for years. My God, they fed the Russian people. With wheat.
Well, it's getting very interesting over there. The Russian supported insurgents shot down a Ukrainian troop transport earlier this week.
Yep.
And today or yesterday, a Ukrainian oil pipeline just happened to blow up.
Well,
a gas pipeline blew up.
Gas pipeline. What chance would you give the Ukrainian army against the Soviet army? Would you give them much of a chance to survive?
I wouldn't give them a hoot in hell.
You got it. And that's the way.
Especially, whether right or especially, wrong, especially considering the fact that Ukraine, whether it not necessarily governmentally, but it has a right wing, well, it's got a little, you know, Nazi problem.
Yeah, they're pouring their ugly little heads out all over, aren't they? Well, they say, well,
there's a definite resurgence.
Well, one of my best friends in the world's dad served on a German subs, and we talk quite a bit about the situation, and he's not, although his dad worked in that city where the Volkswagens were built. His father was a tool and die man after the war.
Wolfsburg?
Wolfsburg. And they emigrated to Cleveland, and his father ended up working, I think, for General Motors or some people like that as a tool. Because tool and die makers, my mom's father, my grandfather, and my mom's side, he was called back to work in 1941. And my God, he worked till 48. And he was, God, he died in 52 at age 70. Something. So how old was he, you know, when he went back to work during the war? Because if you had those kind of skills during that war, they had a job for you, that's for damn sure. They needed you like hell because they were getting men and shipping men overseas. And I still haven't quite figured out, were we forced to go in and fight in that mess against the Nazis and the Japanese military machine or what, you know?
Or did they set up the whole thing? I don't think it was a setup, but I think it was inevitable. Just as it was sort of inevitable that we... Look, at the time that the United States was trying to resist the idea of being pulled into the First World War, Bill, Teddy Roosevelt was still quite alive and was absolutely disgusted. He felt like we ought to jump into the First World War with both feet. And frankly, had he not become grievously ill, and it would wind up being the cause of at least a partial cause of his early death, had he not become grievously ill and been badly hurt, I think, on an adventure up the Amazon, hell, Teddy Roosevelt might well have gone and figured out some way to get himself into the trenches of the First World War.
I think he had a son that was a general officer in World War II.
His son led the invasion of Utah Beach at D-Day.
Okay.
And was dead within a couple of months' time.
Yeah. Before my time.
Had a bad heart.
A year and a half or so. Thank you. I'll take that one, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, stay out of trouble.
I'm going to try. You do the same. Our buddy Mark has sent along a little clip of some Art Tatum, so... just by way of letting folks know who it is you're talking about, we'll play a little bit here.
Yeah.
All right,
you take
Bill.
Care.
You take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Let's check out a little Art Tatum. Well, you know, if a certain computer would, you know, cooperate. Here we go. Thank you. this. From 1933, Art Tatum and the Tiger Rag. And thank you, Mark, for sending that along, because I'm going to hang on to that and play it for Ferg, because not only does he mess around with the guitar, he's also self-taught on a piano, and I don't know, maybe I don't play that for him. The last time I played Al Di Meola for him, he swore he was putting down his guitar. He said there was no point. I don't want to do that with keyboards. But damn! Bill knows of which he speaks. Thanks going out to Sal, who has joined forces with Jason this evening to help out in fundraising. Thank you very much to both longtime supporters of the Horn. Anybody else wanting to jump in with them is more than welcome. It would be nice to end the evening absent the traditional fundraising hole. God, it's a traditional fundraising hole. How lovely. All right, let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Hey, Kevin, what's happening?
Not much. Got to put in a plug for your program as far as culture. Had I not listened to your program, I would have never known this guy from Cleveland that was a member of the Cleveland Blues Hall of Fame, and therefore would have never known about Art Tatum, because that's some good music right there.
Yeah, so, that ain't chopsticks.
Nope.
Nor was it. What's the other one? Heart and Soul, or whatever, the thing that Tom Hanks did on the giant jump on piano in Big.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it's called, but I don't know what you're talking about. This morning on the Today Show, they had an interesting segment. It was about earthquakes in Oklahoma and how they had done a study and thought that, gee, maybe this fracking is causing the earthquakes in Oklahoma. And I got a pretty good kick out of it because someone from the industry says, well, there ain't no proof that fracking's causing this. Just because it's happening all over Oklahoma where there's never been earthquakes before.
Could be demons.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be anything. No proof of that whatsoever. And, you know, I think they said Oklahoma has had more earthquakes than any other state in the union thus far this year.
But wait a minute. Let's consider for just a second here, Kevin. How long has the earthquakes in Oklahoma story been out there? Because I know we've talked about it months ago, probably back when it was below zero weather here, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
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 And it just now made it to the Today Show?
Yep. And I was actually kind of proud of NBC for putting it out there, actually having the gumption to put out that, you know, fracking could be causing this. And it was, I guess you would call it a little bit slanted toward the fact that fracking was causing this. And I'm just thinking to myself as I'm listening to the story that, what will it take for them to ban the fracking? Does it take a 6.0 earthquake in, say, Oklahoma City to, you know, decide that fracking is causing these things?
Well, is that Kevin, I need to know, are you asking that question rhetorically, or are you asking that question with an eye toward me giving you my let's all crawl under the bed and wait for the disaster answer?
Oh, no, I'm asking it rhetorically because I know the answer to it, and if a 7.0 earthquake happened in Oklahoma, they still would deny that fracking caused it.
And that's the whole point here, because you can always make a sort of cross comparison to the most disastrous form of extraction, coal extraction, known in this country.
Yep.
To wit, mountaintop removal. It was 1972 when the Buffalo Creek disaster transpired, and 125 bodies littered the Buffalo Creek holler, and 1,000 were rendered homeless, and everything in that holler was simply erased from existence. Okay? Children were orphaned. Women were widowed. Men became widowers. It was horrible. And, of course, we had a Republican governor then, a guy named Arch Moore, who, when he finally dies, will be so crooked they'll have to screw him into the dirt. And he later went to prison because he turned out to be a bit of a two-bit grifter as well. But in 1972, with all of that, that was occasioned by a sludge dam.
Yep.
And that sludge dam held maybe a couple of 100 million gallons of toxic coal waste. All right, we still okay? Well, that was 1972. By early 1977, a reluctant Jimmy Carter had signed into law something they called the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. Instead of making those sludge dams illegal in this regulatory scheme, we made them super legal, so that now we have about 100 billion gallons of toxic waste tucked away behind earthen rock dams, similar to the same dam that let go in 1972 in Buffalo Creek. All right? So far from stopping something that was killing people, the coal industry, which always gets its way, said, no, hell no. No. Let's make it more likely it will happen. So the answer is, what will it take to stop fracking? 125 deaths wouldn't do it.
Nope.
What'll it take to stop mountaintop removal? 4,000 statistical excess deaths per year in West Virginia counties have proven insufficient in stopping it.
Nope. It seems to be that the answer to every question is because money, and just as you and Bill were talking about a couple minutes ago, nowadays, if you're born into a working class family, you're going to die in a working class family. Very, very rare nowadays are success stories of someone who pulled themselves out of poverty to become the head of a company of whatever kind, because it's just not possible. I listened, I think it was you and Bill, or maybe the caller before Bill, that were talking about the Fox channel, and there was a story, I think, on Alternet today about the propaganda of Fox, and when you were playing that clip of, I forget who it was now, but you were playing that clip, and he was saying, Dinis D'Souza, that's who it was saying, children of the 60s, born in 60 and thereafter, seem to be talking about American exceptionalism in a different sense than people that were born before 1960. That was nothing but propaganda designed to put the people of my parents' generation directly in conflict with our generation over common shared values. And what I mean by that is, we all have the value of wanting to work ourselves up from working class to however successful we can become. And in our parents' generation, it was much easier to do that. In today's generations, and for our kids and grandkids, it's much harder. And instead of focusing on that, Fox is attempting to make it a generational thing, like our generation just doesn't have the same work ethic and values, et cetera, as our parents' generations did. And that's completely not true. And, you know, it frustrates me to no end that people of my parents' generation buy into this garbage, because propaganda was and always is propaganda. You can pick it out pretty clearly when you see it. And it's kind of like the definition of pornography. I may not know what the definition of it, but I know what it is when I see it, and that's the way I feel about propaganda. And yet, the propaganda of the Fox News Channel just keeps getting sold on the American people left and right today. And it's pretty frustrating to me that, you know, we as a nation can't see this.
But let's remember something, Kevin. People don't get fooled who aren't willing to be fooled. I mean, it's the old it's Field's first commandment. You can't cheat an honest man. And consequently, what we're dealing with, and there's a hell of a lot of sociological study and psychological study out there these days that suggests that Americans, being citizens in a deeply polarized, divided country, we're not looking for news anymore. We're looking for bias confirmation. And our good friend Harry in Baltimore has written about this in emails to the Horn Family Commune congregation pretty extensively. We're looking for, and so Fox isn't just conning people into believing things that they wouldn't otherwise believe. Fox is a business model, and it is designed for the purpose of providing bias confirmation to people who are already inclined to think of Barack Obama as that in our White House. They're not necessarily originating it. They are confirming it. And that's a big daggum difference, don't you think?
Yeah, I would agree with you. But even in that, even if I may subconsciously want my biases confirmed, the thinking part of me doesn't want that. Do you understand what I mean by that? I don't want to have my biases confirmed just for the sake of them being confirmed.
No. Bias confirmation doesn't necessarily happen on a conscious level, Kevin.
Right.
It's something deeper. Who knows? Maybe bias confirmation is something that happens in the lizard brain, the amygdala.
Oh. I would tend to agree with that statement, because most biases that we want confirmed aren't very good ones when you think about it, especially in today's culture.
But wait, that's not to say the right wing doesn't have a lock on bias confirmation.
Oh, no.
Our side likes it, too. Look,
sure.
I've got feet of clay. I know it. I don't deliberately... I mean, occasionally I'll hot up the mic, and if I've been out and about, I'll talk about something that just made me want to scream that I heard on the radio. But I don't willingly go out and seek sources of information that I know are just going to be that shit crazy.
Right.
Because part of what I try to do in the way of preparing the show every evening is to actually see some examples of it and point it out. But even that, and I can do this because I'm a liberal and a progressive, and Robert Frost said the definition of a liberal is someone who is so even-handed, they won't even so open-minded, they won't take their own side in an argument. But even in that, I can recognize that we're probably engaging in bias confirmation here.
No, I think that's why I think we're talking about the same thing, because that's what I mean. I don't want my biases confirmed. Even though they may be liberal biases, I don't want them confirmed just for the sake of confirmation. I want them to be proven. In other words, I don't want to be right just for the sake of being right. I want to be right because it is the right thing to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and see, to be fair, I think that when we talk about bias confirmation, it is a different animal to a certain extent on the leftward side of the spectrum. We want to know that we really are living in a fact-based world. So consequently, a story about Pat Robertson saying that the Iraqis won't stop fighting amongst themselves, or the Arabs won't stop fighting amongst themselves until the Antichrist comes yielding the second coming of Christ. That may make us hoot like a barn owl, but it also serves to confirm our bias that those people are freaking nuts.
Yep.
And yet at the same time, we must understand that those people manage to get up and go to work every day, and they're paying their bills, and they're trying to be decent. You know, they're trying their best within the behavioral, social, cultural norms that they had unloaded on them through the course of their upgrowing. Well, okay, you see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Because because there really is an element. Look. I know that if I walk into the Rippy Mart down the street here, that I may be standing in line behind somebody that thinks the Earth is 6,000 years old. In point of fact, Kevin, given where I live, it is much more highly likely that I am standing in line behind somebody who believes that the Earth is less than 6,000 years old than someone who acknowledges the reality of biology.
Yep. Yep, that's very true. And to go to your point about what you're talking about the Iraqis, I listened to a clip this morning of an Iraqi man talking about he doesn't think Baghdad is going to be invaded, but he does expect influx of car bombings and the like. And what that man was saying is no different than what an American would be saying in a similar circumstance. I'm fearful for the future. And I'm fearful for my city. Because as much as we as Americans like to believe that it couldn't happen here, it's already happened here, to a lesser extent, mind you. But those two people that shot those police officers in Las Vegas were no less terrorists than any member of ISIS. And yet, Fox doesn't talk about that. Total blackout on that story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hell no. And see, this is where the dividing line occurs. You were talking about how I think everybody can agree there will be more car bombings, there will be more horrors, there will be more atrocities in Iraq. And yet, with last night's program, going through the Tony Blair essay, he's living in a land... He's gone to Egypt because he's living in the land of denial. Because he's saying, this isn't happening because we completely upset the social, political, cultural apple cart in 2003 in Iraq. No, no, no. And he's making the same argument Pat Robertson's making. Ah, these people have been doing this forever. What the? And see, I'm old enough, and you're a little older than me. I'm old enough that I can remember people arguing about Vietnam that those people have been fighting each other from time immemorial, and they're going to keep on fighting each other. Well, guess what? That turned out to be wrong. A lot of that was because of a political difference of opinion, and it wound up getting sorted out. And it was, it was sorted out brutally, but it got sorted out. And this, too, will sort itself out. But the difference comes where sane people say, yeah, there's going to be more car bombings, there's going to be more atrocities, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not trying to diminish it by saying blah, 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 blah. But we know the script already, right? We'll take that as read.
Oh, sure.
On the other hand, though, you get Aunt Pity Pat Graham, the senator from South Carolina, who is having an he's having the fan tods, he is, and he's out there screaming that the seeds of the next 9/11 are being sown in Iraq even now. It's a certainty. And so in his world, all of this stuff is going to wind up being the precursor to some sort of massive hijacking and whatever, like happened on September 11th, when in fact the people who perpetrated the September 11th attacks told us that the reason they were doing it wasn't because they objected to us generally as the great Satan. The letter arrived. We read it, you know. It said, it's because you've got an air base on our sacred sand in Saudi Arabia. Get out.
Yep.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah. And as you were saying that, I was thinking the seeds of the next 9/11 probably were sown the minute we invaded Iraq. I mean, amongst other things, but Iraq was, this present-day Iraq was directly caused by our invasion of Iraq so many years ago by President Dim Leader, who was an appointed president on top of everything else. And you know, I know, that it wouldn't have happened had Al Gore been president. But that's kind of past history now, because you can't go back and undo it. And Graham Cracker may want to think that the next seeds of 9/11 are being sown by this, but we know different. And that's not biased confirmation on our side. What he's saying is kind of like talking to talking to yourself in a closed room or in a closed loop, refusing to hear any opinion but yours. And no opinion but yours matters. And, you know, it's just sad that we've got people like that. And what scares me the bejesus out of me is I know that the Senate election, this upcoming election, Senate, Congress election in 2014, and the presidential election in 2016, where would we be right now if a Republican was in office today? We'd have already been back in Iraq. We never would have left Iraq. Had Romney won that election in 2012, we never would have left.
Oh, wait, Kevin, back up. Two words, President McCain.
Oh, yeah.
He would have built a conveyor belt, a transatlantic conveyor belt that fed American children straight into the Iraqi meat grinder.
Yep.
Hell, that man was not averse to using nuclear weapons. And insofar as he has a military history that proves he's a screw-up, and the fact that his vice presidential nominee proves he's a screw-up, hell, the man could have dropped. Just the fact that he had, if we're going to talk about alternative time streams, the fact that he has not dropped dead in the last, since 2008, does not mean that he would not have dropped dead in office as president. There's a hell of a lot more pressure, a lot more stress. Now you get say two more terrifying words.
President.
Bingo!
Yeah. But it's an interesting, it's a scary thought to think of it, because I wasn't thinking that far back, but yeah, President McCain. And if there was an alternative time stream, it probably wouldn't be going much past today, because like you said, McCain is not averse to using atomic weapons. And I don't know that we would have survived the next 8 years. if McCain had become president in 2009.
And this is not, and again, let's try to be kind of fact-based about that. This is not to say that Barack Obama is some sort of peacenik.
No.
Remember, he ran for office telling us he would not have supported the Iraq War, but he felt like Afghanistan was the right war.
Right. Yep.
See, there were a number of things that kind of made me go, what? When I heard that Afghanistan's the right war, then what's the question?
But you do realize that President Obama only captured that leader that did the Benghazi attacks to make Hillary's book tour a success. I mean,
there is one little factoid about the Benghazi guy it's getting some traction, but not a lot. This guy has been sitting in coffee shops in Benghazi for a year, giving interviews, 2-hour-long interviews out in the open. It's not like the jackass with Glenn Beck, who had to have his face scrambled. This guy's been giving 2-hour interviews to journalists from all kinds of worldwide news organizations, Reuters, the AP, maybe? I'm not sure. I don't remember. But he hasn't been hard to find.
No.
Perhaps the reason that Fox didn't go and interview him is because they didn't want to hear what he had to say. Because anything short of an implication, a direct implication where Hillary puts on her devil horns and writes the check, you know, to what's-his-name, pay to the order of what's-his-name, amount, umpty bajillion dollars, signed Hillary, memo on check for Benghazi. Anything short of that is going to be unacceptable.
Yep. And make no mistake, a President Hillary is not going to be much better than a President, whoever you want to pick on the Republican side. But
oh no, I think she will be manifestly better than whoever comes out. Look, who are the present front runners? Rand Paul? Hillary's not going to be manifestly better than Rand Paul?
Oh, yeah. But
Hillary's not going to be manifestly better than Rick Perry? Please.
Well, yeah.
Don't send me reaching after the tequila bottle that ain't here, Kevin.
Well, what I mean by that is Hillary is not going to be a Bernie Sanders or a Dennis Kucinich or... Name your favorite.
Right, and here's that moment of political pragmatism that gets me in so much trouble. We are probably never going to have a President Bernie Sanders or a President Kucinich or, God knows, even a President John Edwards. Ain't going to happen. Ain't there.
Nope.
Barring some sort of monumental sea change in this country, it is not going to happen.
Well, I kind of believe somewhere in the distant future it may happen, but it will take a, like you say, a monumental sea change for that to happen. Because there's all too many people in this country that don't want to hear truth on a large scale. And, you know, while there may be differences in stripes of progressive and conservative, the number of people in this country, I would say, maybe would number in the 20-30% category, if that much, who really want to hear the truth as it really is. And that's not even saying the truth as I want to see it.
You know what I'm beginning to think, based on things that I'm seeing just sort of bouncing around in the for-profit media? I think Bishop Willard Romney is actually contemplating another presidential run.
Yep. Yes. I mean, I think you even mentioned it tonight.
He's tanned, he's rested, and he's ready.
Yep. And he's still got funds left over from his last campaign.
Oh, he has money that has money.
Oh, yeah.
And to go back to a phrase that we coined back in a conversation with Brother Albert, he has Starship money.
Oh, yeah. Yep. But if it did, I don't even want to think about a Romney as president because it's pretty much game over at that point. That's kind of like, you just gave the keys over completely. I don't know what I would do with a Romney as president. But then we survived Reagan, maybe there would be hope after a Romney presidency, but I just don't see it. Because that's who the one percenters want. That would be their number one guy, I would think. You get the best of everything there. You get the best of conservatism, and you get the best of because money. And,
of course, we also have to remember that the teabaggers are, they won't be happy until they have President Paul.
Yeah, well, I think the teabaggers are probably not going to get that. I think there's too many people scared by Paul in the 1% class.
Oh, by the way, just to shift gears with you just for a moment, Kevin. I've got a story in the stack here, and I've been waiting all day pretty much for confirmation. There's been another shooting over the weekend. A guy named Brent Douglas Cole, aged 60, decided to take some pot shots at a member of the Bureau of Land Management and a member of the California Highway Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
Happened in Nevada County, California, along the Nevada state line. Nevada, somebody help, I don't know. Guess what? Brent Cole is a self-identified sovereign American citizen.
Yep.
So, guess what? All that business about the Cloven Bundy bunch.
Right.
It's beginning to grow tentacles. I love this. Over at Americans Against the Tea Party, they found a Facebook post of Brent Cole's. The feds backed down less than 24 hours after an InfoWars expose connecting the land grab to Harry Reid and a Chinese-backed solar farm? Notice the... Alex Jones reference.
Because
Brent Cole's a fan.
Yep. Yeah. Well, God knows Alex is trying, but rest assured he won't pick up a gun and do anything. He's too busy making money. He's just waiting. He's like Beck. He's going to have people do it for him. And yeah, that story, I heard about it this weekend too. It hasn't got much play on the mainstream press, but it was out there this weekend, and I think I've heard enough of it to say I could confirm the story. And I dare say I bet the part about the InfoWars connection to it is true too, because that would fall right in line with it, and that's why I say, we talk about things happen in Iraq like car bombings, but we're starting to have it here where people are walking up to police officers and shooting them. Not because they're a bad guy in the terms of what we think of bad guys, like bank robbers and things like that, but because they're sovereign citizens and they don't believe in the government. So we got to shoot those police officers for sitting down and having a hamburger and fries while they're on break. You know, and that's a scary proposition to think. And if I were a police officer, you better believe I'd be much more aware about my surroundings, especially in some of these western states, because that sovereign citizens movement, I would bet, has most of its traction in the south and west. And if it can happen in Nevada, you know, in Las Vegas, then it darn sure could happen here in Colorado Springs or Birmingham, Alabama, you know, just as easy. And it's a scary thing to think about because, you know, I don't know whether those two police officers were fine, upstanding police officers or not, but I do know this. They were just sitting there having a meal. They weren't bothering anybody or anything. And those two people came up and shot, blew them away in cold blood. And it's just a scary thing to think about that someone could do that for no good reason other than the guy had a uniform on.
So. And for no other reason that these people have been whipped into a damn frenzy.
Yeah, but...
deliberately.
Sure, but... you know, how many stories are out there in the media on an average day, in progressive media especially, about a police officer that shot someone that was handcuffed or something like that? Conservatives say police officers are their friends, and yet the sovereign citizens movement, they're going beyond that and saying police officers are the bad guys. You know, and that just, it blows me away on that alone. Without police officers, you know, talk about the breakdown of society, police officers are going to be getting killed just for wearing a uniform. There's not many of us that are safe. Because I wore a uniform once. I was an emergency worker. You know, but yeah. If I can be killed for wearing a uniform, then, you know, how many people wear a security guard uniform or a school crossing guard uniform or, you know, I mean, think about it. There's lots of uniforms out there, and these people are saying that by virtue of the fact you wear a uniform, you're part of the evil government. You know, it just, but that again, I think you've said it, it goes to the breakdown of our society. And we are a society that is breaking apart. And that's the bottom line. And it's because of people like Willard Romney and the rats on the Supreme Court that it's happening. Because if the answer is because money to every question without regard to human life, then nothing is safe. And that's true in your region with mountaintop removal. That's true out here with fracking. That's true in the Gulf because of the BP oil spill and how that was covered up and how Corexit was used and how it'll never be proven how many lives have been cost because of that Corexit being used, and how many people are going to die because of that. It'll never be proven. And I guess what I'm saying is that this is a distrust even on our side, we have our own distrust of the government, maybe for different reasons than these sovereign citizen groups. But it goes to the distrust of everything now. And if the answer is because money, which it is, then there's good reason to distrust everything, because if all the decisions are being based on profit, you know, then there's, you know, there's not much left to do but fight it. And in our case, we're doing it the right way. At least you are in what you're doing. And, you know, I'm glad I'm 54, because I ain't got, at the outset, maybe 30, 40 years left on this planet, and I'm extremely glad for that, because I don't see it getting any better. And
that's where you and I differ. I'm still angry that the average human lifespan isn't 500 years, because I think it would be a different planet.
Oh yeah. We can't even
agree, going back to the Dinesh D'Souza business, we cannot even agree, Kevin, on what the history that's happening around us is. We can't agree on what the history is that's happened in our lifetimes. And it only gets worse the further back you try to go. Look at the Beckerhead and that wall builder freak who just makes up lies and publishes them and says, that's what history says. Compare it with what Dr. Bill does. Yep. By the way, Dr. Bill's moving to 1 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. We can't even give the facts about history, as Dr. Bill was talking about earlier today. We can't even understand the facts about history when the actual primary source documents are right there to be read.
Yep.
Because copious notes were taken during the Constitutional Convention. James Madison wrote extensively. So did Hamilton. So did a couple of other people. And then even the words of the opposition that Dr. Bill was talking about today, I can never remember the guy from Maryland. They absolutely sleazed and slimed him because he was being a very effective opponent of the Constitution. It's there. And yet you've got you got Fat Tony Scalia and the rats up there trying to interpret a constitution that exists only inside their tiny little minds.
Yep.
Interesting. Randy just pointed out the Bible says that the meek shall inherit the earth, but I say by then it won't be worth it.
Yeah. I'll leave it at that. I agree with you, though. I think if people lived 500 years, we'd have a much different perspective on history, because we would have lived through it. And, you know, say Ben Franklin had lived from his time up to our time, and I'm just using that.
Imagine Da Vinci as an old man being able to have a conversation with, pick one, Jefferson.
Yep.
Imagine a correspondence between Ben Franklin and Leonardo da Vinci.
Yep.
Might get some crap sorted out.
Yep.
Of course, this is shamefully speculative on my part, and, you know, you'll have that. Kevin, it's been a lovely conversation. I hope you have a wonderful evening.
All right, Bob. You take care.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Calling from Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin. And it is time to get out of here. Thanks to Sal, and thanks to Jay Cruzen for pretty much bringing you the program this evening. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Jan and Jerry for finishing off Dr. John's challenge. That made a big, big difference. And thank you to John for his input in helping get us out of the hole. We'll have a bit of a hole tomorrow, but hopefully we'll catch up with it. Thanks to all of you for all you do that makes this what it is. Thanks for your participation on Facebook and on Twitter. Thank you for your emails, for your phone calls, for your participation in the chat room. You're the ones who create community here. And that's not a hollow compliment. That's a fact. It is your time and your ideas that form the core of the horn. And it is your contributions which make it possible for the community to continue to exist. So thank you, one and all. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox, who does oh so many things to keep all of this rolling. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, the White Rose Society has been out there for more than 10 years now, literally keeping progressive radio going on the Internet. Had there been, in 2002, had there been no Ben Birch and WhiteRoseSociety.org, I don't know what progressive radio would look like Internet-wise, but I can tell you this much, there wouldn't be a horn. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHEACT.org. You're out there, you're writing your members of the House, you're out there, you're writing your senators, and it is deeply appreciated because this is a real grassroots effort. This isn't an effort that's got big green backing. The AIC campaign is a campaign of ordinary, everyday people who are simply trying to save the lives of their friends, their neighbors, their colleagues, and even the people who hate them. So when you participate in the AIC campaign, you are taking, well, your action becomes magnified, because it is so people-oriented and so essentially grassroots. Call your senators, write your senators, implore them to introduce a companion bill to the AIC Act before this Congress comes to an end. If your member of the House is not signed on to H.R. 526, write to them, call them, email them, ask them why, ask them when. And don't stop just because you get one letter back. Engage in a correspondence. Say, okay, so when are you going to sign on? And the neat thing is I know you're doing that. And it is deeply appreciated not just by me, but by all the people who are pouring heart and soul and energy into this effort. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina. Oh, that's a fine time for the player to punt on me. But punt it has. Oh, you know, Gina. It's all for you. Y'all have a wonderful evening. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Take care. Be well. Have a wonderful night. Bye, y'all.